Thank you. I'm going to be talking about recent work with Natalia Torre and Neil Weiner. I'll thank Jesus for the introduction in the last talk, since that provides a very nice segue into this work. Okay, so just some background first, which most people here will be familiar with. So there are the benchmark models for fitting the Pamela and Fermi excesses that I and other people have presented have generally assumed that there is no local dark matter substructure, and in fitting the excess, all the annihilation is coming from the smooth dark matter halo. This is a conservative assumption in the sense that adding substructure will only increase the signal, so if the question you're trying to ask is it possible to fit the signal only with particle physics without resorting to astrophysical boost factors, then it's conservative. However, as has been pointed out, as Jesus mentioned in his talk, and as has been pointed out by many authors, models with Sommerfeld enhancement can give rise to an unusually large signature from this small substructure. Now, the benchmark models with Sommerfeld enhancement that people have presented are strongly constrained, as was discussed by the speakers in the last session. In particular, models with, and this was something that Doug mentioned this morning but hasn't really been fully explained. In particular, if the force carriers that mediate the Sommerfeld enhancement have low mass, then the constraints on such models from the CMB and from extragalactic gamma rays are extremely stringent. And there are also these other limits that Jenny mentioned, and which I'm not going to go into very much detail on. So, given that we are now setting constraints on Sommerfeld enhanced models using the substructure in other dark matter halos, we should ask, if we do have local dark matter substructure, how does that change the benchmark models that we write down in order to fit the Pamela and Fermi signals? And how does that affect the other constraints that we usually think about? And this is really required for a self-consistent treatment of the extragalactic gamma ray bands. All right, so I'm going to begin just by introducing a very simple parameterization for this kind of situation where you have both a boost factor from Sommerfeld enhancement and from dark matter substructure, where boost factor here is just defined as anything that increases the observed annihilation signal. I'll talk a bit about the constraints from systems where the dark matter velocity is very low, and so you generally get strong constraints from Sommerfeld enhancement, and how they change in the substructure-dominated case. I'll talk about constraints on the force carrier mass from dark matter self-interactions, how that modifies the parameter space. I'll show some results on if we take these constraints that do not themselves depend on substructure from the CMB, from dark matter self-interaction, then how does, and from the relic density, then how does that affect the allowed parameter space? And what are the maximum emitted combined boost factors? And finally, I'll talk a bit about what Jesus addressed in his talk, the consistency of this amount of substructure with the substructure-dependent constraints. Okay, so the lightning review of Sommerfeld enhancement, the second or third such lightning review today, I think. It's not as comprehensive as Jesus's one. Sommerfeld enhancement off resonance is a 1-on-B enhancement to the annihilation cross-section down to some cutoff saturation velocity. If the force carrier mass is m phi and the dark matter mass is m chi, then the scale of the saturation velocity is just set by m phi divided by m chi, up to factors of a few. The ratio of the saturated to the local enhancement off resonance, therefore just scales as m chi times the local velocity divided by m phi, if your local velocity is somewhere in the regime where the enhancement scales like 1 over b. On resonances, the saturated enhancement can, of course, be massively larger. This plot just shows, as a function of the force carrier mass on the x-axis, the ratio of the saturated enhancement to the enhancement at 150 kilometers per second, which is the characteristic velocity of the local smooth dark matter halo. So you can see that for GEV mediators, at least off the resonance peaks, this is only a factor of a couple. The enhancement is already almost saturated in the smooth local halo, but as you go down to 10 to 100 MeV force carriers, the saturated enhancement becomes several orders of magnitude larger than the local enhancement. So, dark matter substructure is small, dense dark matter clumps, which have an internal velocity dispersion that's much lower than the smooth halo. So as has been pointed out by many authors, starting a couple of weeks after Sommerfeld enhancement became fashionable in the wake of the Pamela and Fermi results, this means that inside the in dark matter substructure, the annihilation cross-section can be vastly boosted by Sommerfeld enhancement, in addition to the normal enhancement just from the higher density. So now, especially in the Sommerfeld-enhanced models, this single-film substructure is then completely dominated by the smallest, densest subhalos with the lowest velocity dispersion. So for the substructure part of the signal, it is generally a very safe assumption to take the Sommerfeld enhancement to be always saturated inside these subhalos, just because where it's not saturated, those subhalos do not contribute significantly to the signal. Just for calibration, in this is an example in this paper on substructure by Kamienkowski, Kusiapas, and Kulin in 2010. The minimum velocity in their smallest subhalos at 10^-6 solar masses was about 10^-3 kilometers per second. So order 10^-8 times the speed of light. That's much smaller than m pi over m pi for m pi in the MeV, the GeV range, and m pi in the TeV, in the GeV, the TeV mass range. And as I mentioned on the previous page, as you go to lighter force carrier, the lighter your force carrier is, the greater the saturated enhancement is, and the more important these subhalos become. Okay, so let's just parameterize this in a very dumb and simple way that nonetheless captures the important features. We can just parameterize the total boost factor from substructure. So call the total boost factor from substructure alone in the absence of any Sommerfeld enhancement, delta. So if we didn't have Sommerfeld enhancement, if we were just in a model with a velocity-independent annihilation cross-section, the cross-section would scale like the dark matter density squared times 1 plus delta, where delta is definitionally positive. Yes. Now, then to a good approximation, because the substructure component can be well approximated as completely saturated in the Sommerfeld enhancement, the signal with Sommerfeld enhancement is just rho squared times the annihilation cross-section corresponding to the smooth halo times 1 plus delta times the ratio of the saturated enhancement to the smooth halo enhancement. So whether we're in the substructure-dominated or smooth halo-dominated regime is just a question about whether this second term is much smaller or much larger than 1, or in between. So in the low substructure limit, we're just in the usual regime. The standard fits to the cosmic ray excesses with required boost factors from Sommerfeld enhancement of a few hundred apply. The standard constraints from the inner galaxy, from extragalactic gamma rays apply from the CMB. In the substructure-dominated limit, on the other hand, what we are measuring locally has nothing to do with the cross-section, with the annihilation cross-section 150 kilometers per second. What we are measuring is just the saturated Sommerfeld enhancement times this parameter delta. Especially for GeV scale force carrier masses, this makes very little difference because the local enhancement was already close to saturation. But for light medium masses, this requires a large adjustment of the benchmark models. So let's talk about the CMB constraints first. This is a plot from a benchmarks paper that I and several other people in this room worked on late last year, where we looked at models of inelastic dark matter with Sommerfeld enhancement and forced them to give the correct relic density in the present day and asked what Sommerfeld enhancement, what boost factor they would give for Pamela and Fermi. And that's what this contour plot is showing, and we found boost factors up to about 400. But the red hatched lines show what happens when you apply the CMB limits from WMAP 5. I don't need to talk about the CMB limits because Doug gave a very good and comprehensive description earlier this morning. But the important point of this plot is that the constraints get much stronger as you go to low mediator masses. And below about 200 MeV, we found in general, that there were no benchmark models that could fit Pamela and Fermi with Sommerfeld enhancement alone. and still and not violate the CMD constraints. And the reason for that is just because the CMD is putting a limit on the saturated cross-section. As I said earlier, the local cross-section is related to the saturated cross-section by V local times M chi divided by M phi. If M phi is very small, then the saturated cross-section bound in the CMB corresponds to a very stringent and quite low bound on what the local cross-section can be, if the characteristic velocity locally is indeed 150 kilometers per second. But if substructure dominates, and the relevant local velocity is then very small, it's the velocity of the smaller substructures, then the signal today, what we're measuring in Pamela and Fermi, would also depend only on the saturated cross-section and the amount of substructure. So the CMB bound then translates directly into a limit on the present day signal divided by delta, and it's completely independent of the local velocity distribution or the details of the sum of Bob enhancement. So just to put in some actual numbers, if we have a 1 TeV WIMP annihilating to a light mediator, which then decays to electrons, then to fit Pamela and Fermi with a local smooth halo density of 0.4 GeV per cubic centimeter, you need a local boost factor of about 70. The CMB constrains the saturated cross-section to be less than about 170 times the thermorelic cross-section. So if we say, okay, we take the ratio of the saturated cross-section and the smooth halo cross-section off resonance, going on resonance only makes this worse, is about dark matter mass divided by M phi times the local halo velocity, which is 5 times 10 to the minus 4. We force this to be less than 170 over 70. This tells us, as we would have expected from the results of our paper, that the force carrier mass has to be greater than about 200 MeV. I'm leaving out some factors of 2 here. This actually turns out to be the correct result when you look at the inelastic models. For purely elastic models, the constraint is even a bit stronger. M phi would have to be larger than 300 to 400 MeV. But in the case where we're substructure dominated, now all that this tells us is that the saturated enhancement divided by delta times the saturated enhancement is less than 170 over 70. So if delta, this contribution of the boost factor from pure substructure, no sum of Bob enhancement, is greater than about 0.4, then it's completely then the CMB constraints provide no constraint on the force carrier mass whatsoever. All that they're telling you is that the local delta is greater than this number. So that's a significant difference to the favored parameter space, a significant change to the favored parameter space. Sure.
Can you give a confidence limit to this? Is it like, I don't know, 95%?
So the WMAP limits that I'm using are 95% confidence limits.
So you're saying delta should be bigger than 0.4 and 95%?
If you want to explain Fermi and Fermi with a substructure dominated. Sure.
In the substructure domain, in which case with some Bob enhancement, then delta should be bigger than 0.4. If you do that, you're consistent with the CMB constraints, and if you don't, then you're not. For low media masses, I mean, if your media masses bigger than 200 MeV, then you don't need delta. So in this case, what is the minimum mass of dark matter halos? Is that the 0.1 solar mass that Hess was saying? So at the moment,
I haven't talked about that at all. I've just used delta as a parameter, which is describing how much local substructure we have. I'll talk a bit later on about what the values of delta are that people get in various simulations. So this, exactly the same principle applies to any other constraints which rely on the saturated or low velocity enhancement, which use the ratio between the small velocities in these systems and the local smooth halo velocity to set constraints. In those cases, as with the CMB, only delta matters, and that ratio, depending on the force carrier mass, becomes unimportant. So for order 1 delta, we reallow very small values of M phi, which is relevant for people who do direct searches, who are interested in direct searches, accelerator searches, for these kinds of light bosons. All right, but you might think, well, if I'm going to let the dark matter interact by a 10 MeV force carrier, then I'm giving it a self-interaction with non-negligible range. there are limits on the self-interaction which are kind of orthogonal to the annihilation bounds. So what constraints do those place on the parameter space? For references here, I'll just direct you to this paper by Buckley and Fox. So there's a lengthy list of constraints on dark matter self-interaction. For models like these, where the self-interaction bound becomes much stronger at low velocities, the strongest constraints come from evaporation of dwarf galaxies and from the structure of the cores of dwarf galaxies. So there have been several studies on looking at what the constraints are on models that fit Pamela and Fermi, again, assuming that the smooth halo dominates. So you just want to look at how this changes when you allow it to be substructure dominated. The constraints do get a bit weaker, because in the substructure dominated case, you need a lower coupling alpha to get the same signal, and that also reduces the self-interaction cross-section. But they are not completely negated. All right, so the evaporation constraint. The idea here is just that a bound substructure can be evaporated when the fast-moving particles of the smooth halo collide with the substructure. Collide with the subhalo and knock off slower moving particles. The timescale here depends only on the properties of the host halo, because it just depends on the density and particle velocity in the region of the subhalo. Any of the particles in the host halo have enough energy to unbind particles from the subhalo by definition. So when we observe substructure in a larger halo, then that lets us put a constraint on the self-interaction cross-section. So the existence of dwarfs in the Milky Way and galaxies within clusters gives us this limit on the self-interaction cross-section at around d of 100 kilometers per second, but it has to be less than 0.1 centimeters squared per gram. I know these are the conventional units in this discipline, which I find annoying. But what this translates to in terms of the particle physics parameters, at least in these simple models where the Sommerfeld enhancement can be well approximated by a Yukawa potential, is that if m pi is less than about 20 MeV, then the dark sector alpha has to be less than about 0.01. This is not a super strong constraint, but it does provide some constraints for small m pi. You can also look at dwarf halo shapes. Dark matter self-interactions can give rise to flattening of cores in dwarf galaxies. This has actually been proposed as a way to make cores in dwarf galaxies, if you believe in the cusp core problem. At sufficiently high cross-sections, what happens is that these cores form and then collapse on themselves. So that gives you a true constraint, but usually cross-sections that high are ruled out by the evaporation limits, at least for these simple Yukawa potential cases that we're looking at. So I'm going to define what we called in our paper a self-interaction threshold, which is just where the effect of self-interactions is noticeably different from CDM in the context of these dwarf galaxies. So this isn't truly a constraint because it's not ruled out.
This thing evaporates if the dwarf axis would evaporate if they are hit up by other dark matter, unbound dark matter particles. Because I mean, gravity does funny things, so sometimes opposite of what you expect to happens.
Fair enough. I think so. The way to do this properly is probably to do a simulation.
So I mean, like, for example, you would think if you heat up a dark matter halo, then it should get bigger, but it gets smaller. So
on the evaporation constraints, the constraints that I'm using are just based on estimates. They're not based on a detailed embodied simulation. So yeah, they could be wrong. It would be great if someone could do an embodied simulation with including these self-interactions. That would be fantastic. But yeah, so the estimates that I'm showing here are just that, and they could well be ineffective as being this. So if we require that the self-interaction cross-section is below this self-interaction bound, so it doesn't materially affect the course of dwarf galaxies, then you get a very strong constraint for force carrier masses below about 7 MeV and a rapidly changing constraint between masses of 7 MeV and 20 MeV. Above about 20 MeV in force carrier mass, this constraint goes away completely. But as I said, this isn't really a true constraint because it's not ruled out by observation that there could be some self-interaction effect from the cause of force. Okay, so this is a summary plot. This plot's kind of busy, so let me explain it. So this is using our simplest possible Sommerfeld enhancement model. The dark matter behaves as if it's in a Yukawa potential mediated by the force carrier, and so described by the coupling alpha D. and the mass of the force carrier relative to the mass of the dark matter. So what we're doing in this plot is demanding a boost factor, where boost factor is defined as actual observed signal divided by what you would expect from the thermorelic density, of 100 for 1.2 TeV dark matter. This is about the right cross-section to fit Fermilor and Fermi if you annihilate purely into electrons. The grayed-out region up here is where you would not expect to annihilate purely into electrons, so this isn't really quite the right boost factor to be using. But if we're interested in small mediator masses, then most of the time the phi will decay purely to electrons. So we also require that the cross-section... So we set our coupling alpha by demanding this local boost factor and requiring that the cross-section is not too high to get the relic density. We allow it to be lower if need be than you need to get the right relic density, because there could be other annihilation channels that deplete the relic density but don't contribute to the signal. So this is consistent with the previous relic density constraint, where people were claiming that the problem was that you could not ever get a large enough signal. So that this is just a bound on alpha. So that's it. So what these contours are showing is contours of the dark sector coupling, alpha d. The x-axis is the parameter delta we was talking about before. The y-axis is m phi, the force carrier mass. This green line on this side of the green line are Wimponium formation comes into play. If you don't know what Wimponium is, don't worry about it, because it's generally ruled out by the other constraints anyway. If you do know what Wimponium is, it happens in this region. The red line shows the constraints that you get from the CMB. So what this is saying is that for these lower mediator masses, so you can see that's about delta between 0.4 and 0.5, as we get from our rough estimate. So what this is saying is that for these low mass mediators, if delta is less than about 0.4 to 0.5, then you can't get a local boost factor of 100 and also satisfy the CMB constraint. But if delta is greater than about 0.4 to 0.5, then you're okay. This thin blue dot dashed line is the self-interaction threshold that I mentioned. So below this line, you would expect there to be a significant effect on the cores of dwarf galaxies from these self-interactions. And over here in the corner is the evaporation limit. So if you were in this little region here, then you would be ruled out by the presence of dwarfs in the Milky Way. So this just lets you see how the different constraints interact. You can see that generally the CM, and this is what we would expect. This is another way to look at more or less the same data, which is saying if you switch on delta and the Sommerfeld enhancement, then what is the maximum boost factor that you can get locally, consistent with all the constraints of the self-interaction and the CMD and the relic density. And so you see for these lower mediator masses, it's really completely dominated by consistency with the CMB constraint. It hits 100 at about delta of 0.4 to 0.5 again. If you have delta of even a few, the maximum allowed boost factor can easily be several hundred. And this is just another way of looking at it, which is to ask, compared to the case with zero substructure, how much does turning on substructure increase your maximum boost factor? So you see that even if your boost factor from substructure with no Sommerfeld enhancement is 1, then you can increase the boost factor consistent with all constraints by a factor of 300 for these low mediator masses. Okay, so the point of the talk so far is just that turning on even a modest amount of substructure vastly relaxes the CMB constraints, reopens a lot of parameter space at low mediator masses. So now let's talk about the constraints that do themselves depend on substructure. So Jesus showed this nice plot in his talk, where we're assuming, so if we look at the case with a pretty low astrophysical background, where we dial down the contribution from star-forming galaxies because it's not well known, take that 16% from blazars, we take substructure down to 10 to the minus 6 solar masses, then we have this plot. If we look at the cross-section that this is actually constraining, so this is a saturated annihilation cross-section for this model 1, which was annihilation straight to electrons, so comparable to the plots I was showing on the previous page. So the cross-section limit here is a bit over 2 times 10 to the minus 24. So that's a boost factor of about a factor of 60 to 70. which is in fact what you need to fit Fermat Laurent Fermi. The reason that it's ruled out, it looks like it's ruled out by a factor of several is because in this benchmark model, the saturated annihilation cross-section is 170. It's a factor of between 2 and 3 larger than the cross-section that you actually need to fit Fermat Laurent Fermi. So what this tells us is that in a substructure-dominated scenario, this can be consistent if the saturated boost factor is about 65 to 70 and you have delta of 1. So this is stronger than the CMB constraint. You need delta of 1, not of 0.4 to 0.5. So now the question is, well, that we just dial down substructure to its minimum in order to get that constraint at all. So is that consistent with a local delta of 1? And more generally, if we make delta large locally, what does that imply for the extra galactic gamma constraints? This is a complicated question and not one that I have a very rigorous answer to. There are several independent parameters here. Delta depends on how much substructure is depleted as you go in towards the inner galaxy, where the substructure is depleted by the baryonic disk, whereas the extragalactic gamma constraints do not depend on this. The population of small main halos below the resolution of the simulation, that doesn't affect delta locally, it does affect the extragalactic gamma constraint. And then just the power law and normalization of substructure within main halos affects both the extragalactic signal and delta.
Aren't there subhalos in every extragalactic galaxy? So we've entitled structure.
Sure, but most, so in, yes, but, so at least in the substructure distribution models that I've looked at, most of the signal comes from the outer parts of the galaxy.
Okay.
What happens in that area, of course, is just a small perturbation on the main signal. And so whether it's depleted by a factor of 100 or a factor of 20 or a factor of 5, it just doesn't matter.
A similar question, why are you not comparing to the diffuse galactic signal?
You can certainly compare to the diffuse galactic signal as well. The constraint, and people have done that.
I thought my impression was that it was at least comparable, if not more, than the extragalactic signal.
So the extragalactic signal tends to be stronger if you extrapolate all the way down to 10 to the minus 6 solar masses for the main halos. I know Kev Abizagian did an analysis like this, but he cut it at the resolved, at the level of resolved main halos for the extragalactic background. Once you, if you do what we did in our paper, then generally the galactic signal is subdominant. But yes, that's also a constraint, and exactly this, and the same principles apply. But yeah, you're right. That gets rid of this main halos. That remains a constraint.
So this is just looking at how substructure is depleted towards the inner galaxy. There is significant disagreement. These are 4 models taken from the literature. I'll direct you to our paper if you want to know more details. Look to our paper and the references within our paper. I will just side note here, because the substructure gets so depleted towards the center in these substructure-dominated scenarios, the galactic center limits get vastly weaker. They're not really a consideration. The things you do have to worry about are the extragalactic gammas and the outer halo gammas. So, all right. So what we'd like to estimate is some estimate of how the local delta relates to the boost from a halo seen from far away. For Via Lactea 2, the total integrated boost for a Milky Way-sized halo is between 5 to 30 times the value of delta at 8.5 kiloparsecs. This is really rough, obviously. For Aquarius, the numbers are different. It's different between different analyses of Via Lactea 2, and none of these take into account dark matter self interactions or interactions with the baryonic disk, which might deplete substructure further in the interior. But reasonable estimates have found this rough relation between delta and a Milky Way sized halo. So we can use that to estimate what kind of delta values will be reasonable as we change the amount of substructure, as we change the integrated boost for the Milky Way. And the precise regions of parameter space that work are a little complicated, and I would direct you to the paper. But on the question of whether it's consistency, the answer is The answer is yes, with caveats. The caveats are that even the substructure dominated scenario is rather borderline, and if you allow a larger astrophysical background, then it would get significantly more difficult to find consistency. The parameters that work best are not generally those with the least unresolved substructure, the case that Jesus showed. It's actually somewhat difficult to get delta of one within that minimal unresolved substructure scenario that we looked at. It actually becomes easier if you have somewhat more substructure and a higher delta. It becomes much easier if you allow the power law for the unresolved main halos to vary within its uncertainties, but as you said, Mike, that won't affect the constraints from the outer part of the Milky Way. Increasing the minimum subhalo mass from 10 to the minus 6 solar masses to about 1 solar mass improves consistency, which is appropriate for these models, improves consistency somewhat, but not totally. So the bottom line is, yes, this scenario appears to be in better shape than the smooth halo scenario, but the constraints from the extragalactic gamma ray background are still pretty strong. This was just a side note, but I think I'm short on time, so I will just go to my conclusions. So non-negligible local substructure can significantly relax constraints on the Sommerfeld-enhanced dark matter annihilation explanation for Pamela and Fermi. In particular, at low mediator masses, constraints from the CMB that are otherwise very robust and very strong go away completely. The remaining strong bounds in this scenario are from bounds that themselves depend on substructure, from extragalactic gamma rays, and also from gamma rays in the outer part of the Milky Way. So, thank you.
Questions, Tracy?
I wasn't clear. Parameter delta, is it for you just a parameter, or did you try to estimate what it could realistically be?
So for most of what I said, it was just a parameter, because the conclusion from the literature is as to what it could really be, there's a lot of variation. Reasonable estimates of it, if it's been estimated as 0.5 in some works, as 2 to 3 in other works. These are also works that tend to have a not very large integrated boost for the Milky Way as a whole. If I look at results that other studies have gotten for the total integrated boost of the Milky Way, and take the same sort of depletion of substructure as I go towards the interior, then the value of delta would be larger, could be order 10.
But there's
enormous variation in the literature, which is why I treated it treated as a free parameter and see what the effects of varying it are.
And was there preference for really light? Because you mentioned 20 MeV carriers earlier, but
So. If you want to flatten out the cores of dwarf galaxies, if you want there to be meaningful effects of self-interaction on the interiors of dwarf galaxies, then you would want very light mediators, like in the lighter than 20 MeV range. This sort of thing might also help with relaxing the extragalactic gamma ray bounds, because you know then that there are self-interactions large enough to modify the small structure, but that's something which I think we would need a simulation to really probe. But yeah, so that region may be favored just because you would expect it to not look quite like CDM, and that might help relax these limits. But I mean, in terms of the other constraints that I talked about, there aren't any detections, so it's equally as favored as anything up to several hundred.
I see it on this delta at h kiloparsec. So just probably most people here realize this, but the simulations, if you just look at the simulations themselves, they always find delta of 10 to the minus 4, something like that. Like Mark wrote a paper on that, and then we also showed that. So if you want to get to like order unity or 10 or so, that's all in extrapolating for 10 orders of magnitude below what the simulations are.
Just in the
So it's kind of natural that the estimates in the literature are varying quite a lot.
Oh yeah, sure.
Lever arm of extrapolation.
Right. Yeah. Sure. No. I mean, if I implied that this was people who extracting things from simulations wrongly, then that was not my intent.
No, yeah. You didn't imply that. It's just this is the.
This is an extrapolation. There's a reason there are big differences in the literature, which is why my preference is to treat it as a free parameter at least initially and see what the effects of varying it.
And then the other comment I wanted to make was about the baryon. So there's some claims in the literature that including the baryons could actually increase the amount of substructure too. I mean, adiabatic contraction tends to increase the amount of smooth dark matter. And so if you imagine all this smooth dark matter is made up of lots of microhalos.
Can I get references?
Yeah, sure.
So
it's not obvious that it, I mean, I agree that the disruption with interactions from stars in a disk is going to lead to this disruption of it more likely, but overall it's not so.
Sure, I mean, the effect of baryons is one of those. It just adds to the uncertainties on what a plausible local delta would be, but it's interesting. I don't want to say that certainly delta is one or whatever. I think it's quite plausible that delta could be very small, but it's interesting to note that a very modest value of delta of 0.5 to 1 can actually have enormous effects on the range of parameter space that is allowed.
But some people may argue it's not very modest.
on the basis. Well,
I'm not one of those people, but I'm just
sure.
Saying that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's always an extrapolation.
So if there is no other questions, so let's thank Tracy again.